I'm Ruthie, host of Out There, here on Valley Free Radio. Tune in for stories from the streets and paths of Northampton and beyond, Fridays from 4 to 5 p.m. Get out if you can, but if you can't get out, tune in. We don't care if we live out of date. We don't care if we're a little bit late. And it is indeed Friday, November 26th. No, that's Saturday on the calendar. It's Friday, November 25th. According to the studio calendar, I'm live and confused here in the studio of Valley Free Radio. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring, here with Paige Bridgens, another live one. Paige, thanks for coming in.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Yeah, Paige asked the other day, hey, is there anything I can do to help with, like, with Dwayne being in the hospital and all that care that you're doing? I said, yes, come help me with my radio show because I haven't had any time all week to prepare.
Here I am.
That's what friends are for. So Paige and I are going to talk about lots of stuff. We don't know yet exactly all we're going to talk about, but we got some fine ideas. Like, I'm blanking. Help me out, Paige.
Well, one thing we have to talk about is leaf blowers. We need to be talking about this as a community, and we're starting right here.
Oh, yeah, and cell phones and choices about to have or not to have a cell phone and how that affects ourselves and our communities. It's fresh in my mind here, I was just remembering, this is unrelated to anything we just mentioned, but in terms of little stories of the day. So I was doing pedal people today and coming back from Valley Recycling down Route 10, and I noticed a billboard there this week that I didn't notice last week. And the billboard had a woman and lots of pink writing and a razor, like a shaving razor. And it said, get waxed.
I'm hissing.
Well, last time Paige was live in the studio, it was with Ami. The three of us did a show called The Bearded Ladies 3. Anyway, I saw that get waxed sign, and I'm like, Paige, we got to climb that billboard with some white paint or some white tape and just paint over part of that W and just let it say, get vaxxed.
Come on, let's do it.
All right. Any other stories? I'm sure there's many other stories from the day, but I want to give a little thank you to whatever fairy left a treat from the pie bar on our duck and chicken feed barrel. Maybe they meant it for duck and chicken feed, but it was right on time as I grabbed it a few minutes ago on my way here to the studio. It was a hard ride uphill, uphill and into the wind from Valley Recycling this afternoon. Strong winds out of the northwest. I didn't have time to nourish myself properly. So thanks for the blueberry, I don't know what you call things wrapped up in a flour, butter, salt wrapping, but it worked. Anyway, Paige, I also asked you for some songs. So I think I'm going to play a song, and then we'll talk a little bit. We'll talk about what we're going to talk about.
The falling leaves drift by the window. The autumn leaves of red and gold. I see your lips, the summer kisses, the sunburned hands I used to hold. Since you went away, the days grow long, and soon I'll hear old winter's song. But I miss you most of all, my darling, when autumn leaves start to fall. soon I'll hear old winter song. But I miss you most of all, my darling, when autumn leaves start to fall.
So autumn leaves are a beautiful thing, isn't that King Cole says? What do you think, Paige?
Well, let me just tell you, the reason I chose that song is it's a love song. And I feel such a love for the autumn leaves. Now, when Nat King Cole or others sing that song, they're singing about their beloved human, and it's a little bit metaphoric or something. For me, it's very real. And I think the autumn leaves are, he's missing a lost love. That's how I feel when I see autumn leaves treated as they are in the world in which we live right now, right here.
It seems like when leaves start to fall, people are, just thinking about removing them.
Well, there is a period of time in the fall when people are absolutely enamored of them. They turn all these gorgeous colors, and they just fill our senses with such beauty. And then shortly after that, it becomes this really big problem that people perceive that we have to get rid of them, that they are a big, big problem. This love who they've felt so many beautiful feelings for a few weeks before suddenly get turned into this massive problem that they have to abuse.
Well, yeah, because people don't want them to kill their grass or to hold in moldy stuff or disease or stuff like that, I guess, right?
Yeah, and sometimes I think it's just habit that I think a lot of times it's about a failure of imagination, and that this failure of imagination has been cultivated in us. And I kind of feel like this is maybe how so many things become norm that then become just so baked into our culture. And so I don't feel like a lot of people they're just on automatic pilot, and they've already got the landscaping firm signed up to come and deal with them. And yeah, there is also that preening and the concept of having it look good. I hear a lot about looking good.
Yeah.
And looking good means barren.
Yeah. Well, you know how we had no mow May? I wonder if we could have no blow November.
Yes. Yes. Although I see problems with both of those. We need we need to climb through the murk of all of this and get to solutions that are authentic and year-round and that help us just release from this tight control over our space.
So the leaves, the trees, they make these leaves, they and the sunshine and the air and everything, they make these leaves. Like, What is the natural process of leaves that's been happening for millennia? How do you think it should be that would be best for the earth?
Well, that's a really good question. And, you know, how would it be under natural conditions? And how would it be that we could transition towards something like that? Yeah, it seems as though in the natural sequence of things, these leaves fall, and we call them leaves, but really there's so much going on in them, and they have eggs on them, or caterpillars, or adult insects, and or those insects use those leaves. They make themselves at home in those leaves on the ground. And bumblebees have their homes, create their homes underground with the leaves as protection from the cold. And so there are already so many functions of these leaves. And then the leaves, over time, decompose. I mean, first, some of them kind of blow away. Some stay right where they are.
Away. Away. There is no away.
There's no away. This is true. So
the energy that's spent into making these leaves, if the leaves are removed from the tree every year, year after year, do you not deplete what the tree needs?
Yeah. These leaves decomposing on the surface of the earth are creating the next layer of topsoil. The trees, the shrubs, the plants are all taking up nutrients. This is nutrient cycling, where they are taking up nutrients to make those leaves. Then those leaves fall and they nourish the soil for the next season's leaves and for subsequent season's leaves and the vitality of the trees. In many cases here in Northampton, it's over 100 years that the soil has been depleted from annual removal of this next layer of topsoil. Let's take, for example, places that we all know. Let's just do a little brief look at, say, Forbes Library, without going into a lot of detail. But those big oaks, and now the little ones with them, in the front of the Forbes Library so I've lived here 40-something years. So in those 40 years, I personally have witnessed removal of the leaves. And so that's at least 40 years of depletion of nutrient cycling right there, of these beautiful trees.
And we've witnessed removal of some of the oak trees as well.
Yes. So numerous of them have died. Some of that could have been partly from that. Some could have been because of the road work, the widening of the road of West Street. And so many of the trees in our community are living under these malnourished conditions. And this is not the kind of thing that is addressed with some chemical fertilizers that are intended to take the place of what these leaves could do. These are natural systems. So back to those oak trees. Oak trees host a phenomenal number of insects, all kinds of insects, really amazing creatures, butterflies and moths and beetles and many of those insects live in the soil, protected by that leaf litter, or they live in those leaves or on those leaves. They have different stages of their lives. The egg, the chrysalis, the next one, and then the adult. And so we're not just undernourishing the trees. We are undernourishing the insects who live there.
What about the pesty ones that we don't want?
Well, name them. I mean, there aren't very many who live in oak trees who are problematic. I work in an oak forest in my kind of day job. And, you know, I showed this, you know, I was telling the owner, she saw all these holes in one of these leaves and just, oh my God, what do we need to do about this? And I said, they're eating, you know, somebody ate portions of this leaf. This is a good thing. It's not something we need to be worried about. It doesn't mean the whole tree is going to be dying from an insect eating its leaves.
Mm-hmm. Like if I eat some leaves out of your garden plot, doesn't mean I'm going to eat the whole thing, the whole plot.
That's right. That's right.
That's what it's there for.
That's what it's there for. Exactly. So, and then there's a concern I have about how do we get to a place where a practice gets so normalized, a practice that's inherently destructive. And I mean, when people are doing it, they're not thinking it's destructive. But part of that is because of not knowing.
Yeah.
And I think that we're not teaching children. We teach children so many different things. And one thing that I ask the children in my life, you know, what are you learning in school about trees and how to care for trees in your community? Huh? They say, no, we're not learning that. They have to learn other stuff to pass the MCAS and things like that that aren't about community tree care. You know, and I see this is a little bit different topic, but I see how in this culture we teach children, this is something I witness on a regular basis, we teach children how to play soccer, but we don't teach them how to care for the floodplain that the soccer field is on. Or rather, we teach, I think that there's some empowerment. I mean, what do you call it? Entitlement. Where we teach entitlement, we are conveying to children and young people and to these contractors who are doing this that they are entitled to do this work of disregarding the natural world around us.
Yeah, because all those critters are trying to live. They're trying to live there. It's so full of life, I think. And people, like, I know I don't often take the time to put my eyes, just lie down on the ground and look and just see what I see. But there's so much life, even life beyond what I could see if I did look.
Right, right. Yeah.
So if people want grass, some lawn kind of space, like is lawns and then grass, is like a backyard with some grass incompatible with leaving tree leaves and tree health?
I don't think so. You don't need to blow the leaves. So the blowing, let's talk a little bit about what this actual blowing does.
Yeah.
So it's so complex. There's so many different facets to this blowing. So, first of all, if it's a two-stroke engine, it is spewing toxins from that actual burning of the fuel that's in it, fuel mixed with oil. And then that mixes with the dust that's blown up and the all kinds of things that are blown up into the air. And so some people reduce this to just the noise. The leaf blowers are so loud that that becomes the dominant complaint. I want to put forward the idea that, yeah, the noise is, it is maddening. It is so maddening. And you can be deep in your home and have to hear from far away people blowing these leaf blowers. But it is not only the noise. This is a really, really important concept that I run into problems with other people who say, yes, we've got to get bans on gas-powered mowers and have the city, you know, have it be okay to just use electric ones. Electric ones blow. And they're maybe not quite as powerful, I'm not sure, but they nevertheless do that action of blowing. They're like blowing up the surface of the soil. This is the little particulate matter that forms that next layer of soil, in addition to the leaves that have just fallen. Any detritus that is in there, it is blown away. It compacts the living soil. Soil is a living space.
It blows off anything that's sort of loose and trying to settle and create the next generation and just leaves what's compact.
Absolutely. And so it erodes soil, it compacts it, and it dries out that soil. It harms plants, microorganisms, and pollinators, as we mentioned. And then back to these air pollutants, numerous websites say how the pollutants of these gas-powered machines they exceed pollutant emissions of large cars. And, you know, this would be totally unacceptable if it were a car. Mm-hmm. But it has not been dealt with.
Yeah.
There are gas spills. But then back to this idea of gas-powered leaf blowers or electric leaf blowers, there are serious problems with the electric leaf blowers. And people say, you know, this is zero emissions.
Ha ha.
Ha ha, indeed. So, I mean, this is a phrase that gets bandied around a lot.
Oh, yeah. You know, and that reminds me, sometimes I'm biking and I'll be behind a car that says, partial zero emissions vehicle. Like, they didn't go to math class, did they?
Partial zero. Love it. So wait a second. So if it's electric, and then these batteries get charged. We'll talk about the battery. If we have time here, we'll talk about the batteries. We need to talk about the batteries.
Yeah.
But let's first just talk about how when you plug in that battery charger, what's happening? What's zero about that? It is connected to the grid. And unfortunately, I think one of the memes that's gotten around is that the grid is like, that's zero. Zero emissions.
It will be when it collapses.
That's when it will be zero. And for now, it is anything But so when we plug in our electric leaf blowers or cars, my electric bike, I need to remind myself to think about the mining that takes place. A lot of the grid is coal powered. We need to think about the fish who are extirpated with hydropower. There's still nuclear in the grid. This is beyond what anybody can take care of.
Oh, that reminds me. I have a little funny interaction story that I had with someone this week. But if you just tuned in, you're listening to Paige Bridgens. This is Out There on Valley Free Radio. I'm Ruthie Woodring. Paige is a friend and gardener and nature host of many natural things around town, and also host of the Bike Lab. But so I was picking up trash. I was emptying the trash barrels in downtown Florence on Monday. And someone dumps cat litter. Like sometimes it'll be 30 or 40 pounds of cat litter in this one barrel. Once it was 70 pounds. I took it home and weighed it. It was 70 pounds of cat litter. Anyway, that happened for a year and a half, maybe almost. And then it didn't happen, hasn't happened for about 6 months. And then on Monday, it was there again. Ugh, I was so bummed. I had brought out just a little trailer to empty those six bags, but I could barely get it on the little trailer. I thought I was going to have to go back and get a big trailer, which just meant a much more difficult day for me. Anyway, so I emptied that. I pulled that bag with the cat litter in it, and then I went to the next barrel in front of Birds. And a friend of mine came out to say hi. And, oh, hey, Ruthie, how you doing? I'm like, Jim, my back, this cat litter again. You know how much I hate cat litter? Blah, 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 blah. And then this guy peeps out from behind him and is like, cat litter? What's so bad about that? And I'm like, well, for one thing, it's really heavy. And he's like, yeah, but it's just a natural material. And I'm like, yeah, but it's like shipped from Wyoming. It's mined in big mines, just like coal is strip mined. And it's trucked across the country. And then it goes out as trash on my back. And then it gets trucked some other place. And he was like, well, it's just a natural thing. It's not, you know, it's not like lithium mining or something like that. And I was like, yeah, now that's bad. And he said, yeah, I think that's the worst thing that's ever happened to the world. And I was like, wow, that's serious. I don't know that I'd go that far, like compared to like uranium mining and nuclear, you know, nuclear weapons and things like that. And he was like, oh yeah, yeah, it's worse. Anyway, at least someone, you know,
Yeah, I'm impressed that this person would bring up lithium mining, you know, that you randomly encountered a conversation about lithium mining. I don't hear about it very much. Mm. And in the Gazette, I see articles extolling the electric cars and how we got to get more electric cars going. And on rare occasion, there's a letter to the editor that references the mining or Earth Talk. There was somebody who just kind of went around that, mentioned it briefly, but said, oh, but it's so important that we go ahead and do it, even if it is horrible. Hmm.
Just to back to that story, I do want to say that I did suggest alternatives to clay cat litter, such as like recycled newspaper and other like wheat, wood shavings, there's other things that are part of the waste stream that are much lighter and more biodegradable, or that can be used to mulch bushes and stuff with if they just have the pee in them. Anyway, separate topic. But so, Paige, you have a song. We need to take a song break.
Okay. So since you had just started talking about lithium mining, do you want to play either music from the Atacama Desert?
Yeah, I want to play that one because that's what I got queued up.
Or, okay, the one from the Democratic Republic of the Congo, which I hope you'll get to, because it's such a great song. Mm. Not that I can understand the words, but...
I think it's... Atacameños. Atacameños. Where is that from, Paige? Do you know?
Northern Chile.
Ah.
In the area where there are massive lithium salt flats. This is in the Atacama Desert. It is an enormous desert that is now, has been for the last, I'm not sure how many years, where lithium is mined and then it is, it resides in these, evaporation pools and, takes, I don't know how long to evaporate, but during the course of evaporation, as the concentration of the lithium in the water changes, the colors change. So there was this photographer who did some aerial photography. He goes all over the world photographing these mining operations in order to kind of expose them. And you can see these photos of brilliant canary yellow or turquoise. And so these companies are using vast quantities of water. And so they are drawing down the water and polluting it and creating situations for the Lik'anante people, the indigenous people who live in these salt flats, are struggling with the reduced quantity and quality of water because of this lithium mining. And these companies are responding with just expanding operations because of the demand from the global north for batteries, for lithium ion batteries. So this is of grave concern. And these lithium salt flats in the Atacama Desert have 40% of the world's supply of lithium. This is in the lithium triangle. This is Chile, Bolivia and Argentina. There's also lithium in China. There is some lithium in the United States. And Ruthie, you just mentioned a few minutes ago about scraping the seafloor for some lithium.
Yeah, here's an article that says, mining the ocean floor for submerged minerals is a little-known experimental industry, but soon it will take place on the deep seabed, which belongs to everyone according to international law. Yeah, seabed mining for minerals like copper and zinc and lithium, it already takes place within countries' marine territories. But as soon as 2025, larger projects could start in international waters, which are areas more than 200 nautical miles from shore. So does that mean that, like, any country who wants to, who can get there first, is legally allowed to scrape it?
Oof. We got to learn more about this.
Yeah, that what I just read is from an article called, or a website called The Conversation. But if you look up deep sea or scraping the sea for lithium, there's lots of different articles about it. And then Paige, I was looking for, you said you're talking about the Congo and lithium mining in the Congo.
Yes. Now, specifically cobalt is what
cobalt, right, yeah.
I was researching most recently in the Democratic Republic of the Congo, and the violence associated with mining, where mining companies finance armed groups. There's been a tremendous amount of conflict in the Democratic Republic of the Congo. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it has to do with this mining. There was a lot of copper mining, and that seems to have been reduced. Maybe it's being depleted. Maybe it's more that cobalt has shown up. And the Democratic Republic of the Congo has half of the world's supply of cobalt. So this, again, is another mineral used in these batteries that in this part of the world are being claimed to be these wonder minerals that are so necessary for us making a transition to, non-fossil fuels. And I just cringe when I hear this, because first of all, the amount of fossil fuel use in these mines, trust me, these machines doing all of this, these are not electric machines. And the global financial interests in these mines are heavily embodied in fossil fuels. And even if they weren't, the fact of this devastation, the biodiversity in both of these areas, both the Atacama Desert in Chile, and then also in this area in the Democratic Republic of the Congo, water supply, water pollution, loss of biodiversity. Again, this is this pattern, this colonial pattern of the global north taking from the global south and claiming it and not telling the whole story mm-hmm. as it goes along.
So what do you think needs to happen? Like, do you think we need to, like, change how we live or something?
Well, yes, I'm so glad you asked that. Yeah, and this is not something that we hear much about either. We hear about the transition to renewables, and it's so often it sounds like magical thinking, and I believe it is. And I think it's easier to say than, gosh, guess what? We need to live simpler lives.
That reminds me of a little poster or meme that my friend Johanna sent me recently, where it says something like, we used to think that the utopian future was like this bubble city where we could eat freeze-dried food or something like that. It wasn't quite like that. But now we realize it's just like a street with shade trees and cyclists and walkable, a place we can walk down.
Yeah. Yeah. And in terms of this leaf blowing, I mean, of all the things to kind of abandon in the course of all of this, if we look at the devastation in these other parts of the world and even here that these machines are, their embodied energy creates and then their use creates, it just seems so simple to just let them go. Mm-hmm. But it's, a lot of people would say otherwise.
Yeah. So going back to the leaf blower thing, I was having a conversation recently with a friend who, he was just hanging out on the bike path bench after a hard day's work of leaf blowing. And we were talking and he said he was talking about a customer. He's part of a big landscaping company. And they're so busy blowing leaves right now. But he was talking about a customer who, every time a leaf falls, she wants them out there to blow it off the lawn. So, like, where does the blame lie? You know, how do we shift this culture around trying to remove leaves from grass?
Hey, so good question. So there's just now forming an unlawnful campaign. And I don't know very much about it, but it's across this continent. And people can just do a search for unlawful campaign, and they will come up with that. And, you know, when I say it could be so simple, so the other day I was on Ward Ave and here in Northampton, I saw this house with a yard that just had all the leaves on it, had a few birch clumps. You could tell that there were ferns growing there and some other plants that kind of had the leaves on top of them. Ah, oh, it was so calming to see this sight. And I went to the front door and I knocked on the door because I wanted to find out, you know, what brought them to this paradigm of not blowing their leaves. Next door were two signs saying, "Fall cleanups, call this number." And but so I knocked on that door and I kept knocking and I tried to ring the bell, but nobody answered. But I'm going to go back. Uh-huh. I want to find their story.
Maybe the leaves will be blown away by the time you get there.
I don't think so. Uh-huh. I think it's intentional. Uh-huh. The pathway that passed through there was all very clear. Uh-huh.